preserving plant species, actually, for the future, and crop species is our next topic. Another batch of New Zealand's most precious pasture seeds have been delivered to a doomsday mountain vault in Norway. The Svalbard Global Seed Vault, 120 metres inside an Arctic mountainside, has more than 930,000 varieties of crops. It means that they can be retrieved and regrown should a disaster wipe out a crucial plant species. Last month, seeds for ryegrass, a standard clover, and a subterranean clover were sent over. Kumars Gamkar is director of Ag Research's Margot Ford Gene Bank in Palmerston North, which is New Zealand's very own, albeit smaller, backup vaults. Kumars is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
Could we get a more Kiwi contribution to this than ryegrass, a standard clover, and a subterranean clover?
We basically got those two species, white clover and subterranean clover, but also some ryegrass, other species of grasses, which are important for our pasture here in New Zealand. Some species that we call, specific genera we call festuca, or tall fescue, and other trifolium species. So this is a good delivery. We're very proud of that in the 15th anniversary of the Gene Bank.
Let's talk about the mission first of the Gene Bank here and then in Svalbard. This is it's not so much doomsday prepping, one imagines, as making sure that very important species can survive what might be a devastating event somewhere, right, or a devastating disease. Is that the case?
Yes, that's basically we using that place for a backup. It's not the only place that we use for backup, but that's the place that all gene banks or our sister organizations around the world, there's about 1,700 gene banks like ours, around the world, and they just deposit a backup, not everything, but a backup of the most precious material in there in case of a disaster. It's actually resistant, we were being told, to nuclear explosion as well. So, because I've been there, it's 200 meters underground, but despite that, 200 meters within the mountain, and it's still well above the sea level in an island far away.
So the aim is to truly ensure you can start again after a devastating event, or as we said, specific crop species might be able to start again after a devastating event. I think we spoke to them many years ago in Svalbard, Kumars, but just remind us a little bit longer, a little bit more about how long that particular joint venture's been happening and how much its stocks have grown over the years.
Yeah, well, the capacity, yes, Catherine, I remember we talked in 2016 when I traveled there. Thank you for that, and thanks. It's great to be here again. It's a good reminder that, you know, we started our relationship with that internationally significant vault, which is run by the Global Crop Trust, linked to FAO. So they just really serving the humanity. They're not taking any seeds away from anyone. By the way, what we sent away is not New Zealand endemic seeds. It's just agricultural material, which is 100% exotic or from overseas countries. So everything that we deposit there is for the future, humanity's future, and no one else can take our material away. So it's just whatever we deposit, we can pull out later. And a good example of that is Syria, of course. During the civil war, they did that very recently. Another near disaster, not exactly the same disaster as in Syria, was in Ukraine when the gene bank was almost hit, very close shot by the Russian forces. And they're now moving that to the western Ukraine, inside Ukraine, but they're backing up the material in Svalbard as well. It's grown dramatically since then, but still has a lot of space because it has capacity for 4.5 million packets of seeds. And right now they have just over 1.6 million.
So regrettably it is war so far that has that has seen the necessity actually put into practice or potentially put into practice. So what determines what countries will send? I heard you say that we haven't sent native species, and would we likely not because they're our natives, or simply are they not natives that would be seen as absolutely vital to, say, food supply? Could you explain?
Well, if it's a discussion that we need to have in the country, but that's not for me to decide. It's for a kind of naturally coming discussion, but it's a political decision. And at this stage, we're not allowed to send anything out, and we don't. I don't have a huge collection of indigenous species anyway. It belongs to Massey University, but we are caretakers of that here, and we don't touch it. But eventually, it's not my decision. It's a national decision whether we want to back it up. If we do want to back it up, then we're welcoming it. But that's not for me to decide. I think we need backup of our endemic material. But again, we respect all the rules here, and we don't share our seed, our indigenous seed, with anyone. But we do share anything that we collect internationally. We have great international collections in terms of international collaboration. Very recently, I was in Taiwan discussing, even sharing more resources in terms of the agricultural material. But that's a different thing to endemic species, because we don't really have an endemic agricultural material as such.
I think, Syria, as you were telling us earlier, due to its devastating long-running civil war, the first and only country so far to recover seeds from the vault, I think this was varieties of wheat and barley. What are the sort of the operational rules surrounding who can withdraw and when? Do we share these seeds, if necessary, with nations who need them? Does a nation only withdraw its own seeds? How does it work?
Yeah, the operation is like a Swiss bank, so no one can take something that Margot Fort Gene Bank or New Zealand National Gene Bank deposits. It's only this gene bank that can withdraw that material. So it belongs to New Zealand, even though it's an international collection, but no one else can withdraw it except if we allow that. So the only case that has happened so far is really just Syria, and that's not the gene bank didn't belong to Syria. It was based in Syria. It's an international gene bank called ICARDA, which is focused on dry areas and does a lot of wheat and barley and some forager species as well, the kind of species that we are interested in. But because of the war with ISIS, it was damaged. But the good news was that they had already deposited a lot of the material in Svalbard, and therefore they were able to redraw it. And now they're based in Morocco and Lebanon, two branches, and they increased everything back again and redeposited. So all of that is done. And they returned, not only they increased the seed again and revived it, they returned the extras again back as a backup for another future disaster potentially.
Climate also must be on everyone's mind these days as well, and that gets another reason to try and preserve some of these species. How long can they be preserved, by the way? Do all seeds just quite happily truck along forever in the right conditions? Are you updating and replenishing the stocks? How does it work?
Yeah, no, it, unfortunately they don't. So seeds have a lifetime. They're living materials, so they can't survive forever if you don't take care of them. What we do is that we keep them for long term in minus 20 degrees. We have a huge freezer room here at Margot Fort Gene Bank. This is really the only facility in the country that can do that for seeds. And then we have another kind of fridge temperature, 0 to 4 degrees for short-term, medium-term storage. But within that minus 20, if you have hard-seeded material, that's seeds like clover or lucerne or chickpea, these kind of seeds, they can survive in those conditions for up to 100 years. But the softer seeds like grasses can survive up to 50. And that's going to be reduced if you keep them in a fridge temperature, like by half. So that's the thing. But also we have to replenish and regenerate these seeds all the time. So that's our operation. That's a huge part of our operation. So what we do is that we collect seeds or we request them from other countries. Then we increase that seed and then we take care of it and we distribute between researchers and everyone who's needing it around the world for breeding purposes. And we also do some research here. So we're not just a storage and replenishment center. We do like to increase that part of research as well, given climate change, because we keep about 2,600 species of forages here. I'm sure you can guess we only use a handful of those here in New Zealand, but there are a lot of species that we think have potential to be future species for New Zealand, forages or else.
And they're all stored at the gene bank. Also, have you been involved with the methane research, trying to reduce methane emissions from animals? Have you got crops that are relevant to that?
Yes, absolutely. We actually right now are working on some potential promising forages. We have published some of that in the past, and we're working on a couple of species right now that we think will change the game, hopefully. And it just needs support. It just needs to be ongoing to find real solutions within forage species. Of course, ag research is advocating the scientific facts that the climate change is happening and we need to do something about it. But also, the forages are one of the solutions, you know, apart from vaccines and other research that ag research does. But what Margo Ford Gene Bank is doing as part of ag research is that we're looking at, say, the needle in haystack, the collection that we have to find the forage that can actually reduce methane.
Thank
and there are promising results, yeah.
Thank you. Keep in touch about that, would you? Thank you. That is Kumaz Gamkar, who is Director of Ag Research's Margo Ford Gene Bank in Palmerston North, and the latest batch of seeds from it have headed to that Svalbard Global Seed Vault, which is closing in on a million varieties of crops, 120 metres inside an Arctic mountainside.